All right, welcome back. Well, that was kind of fun, Jeff.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I'm Scott J. Peterson, and we're looking at a bunch of great stuff around ASP.NET Core. .NET Core is phenomenal, but we got so much more to talk about. So in this session, we're going to talk about a bunch of different data storage concepts. We're going to talk about Azure SQL, SQL Server 2016, Azure Storage. But it's not really built this way, but honestly, we're going to talk about how cool the SQL Server data tools are. And I'm going to do this for a couple of reasons. So for those of you that just joined us or catching up, if we take a look at this slide, this is where we're at in these sessions. In the first session, we talked about .NET Core Application Insights, ASP.NET. We threw it all up, and then I almost had a heart attack, but Scott Guthrie called and said, push all this stuff out there live. So hopefully those of you that are out there, you go to tagger.it or taggerit and just start uploading photos, see what happens, have some fun with it. I think our goal is to see how much activity you can get before it crashes, right? Which will give us a bunch of great information in Application Insights. We can look at that and then later in Power BI. But so we'll see. But so we talked about that. Now we're going to talk about database concepts, storage concepts. Right now, what's out there live is just hitting Azure SQL. So Azure SQL is great. But we want to do some other things to kind of really enhance the whole database strategy or data storage strategy. So here's a quick breakdown for those of you that are watching that aren't quite sure what the differences are in some of these different data storage concepts. And really what matters. And these are questions that I get all the time. Because as some of you have noticed, I look like the old fat and flabby Luke Skywalker. So if you've seen the latest Star Wars movie, people all the time. In fact, as some of you know, I have 10 children and a bunch of my older kids even called me after the new Star Wars came out and they said, oh my gosh, you look like the old Luke Skywalker. So I do, if you're out there around the world and you think, is that Luke Skywalker? No, I have no skills whatsoever, but you're not crazy. So, but I can answer questions about Visual Studio 2017, especially .NET Core. And in the area of data storage, here are the questions that I get a lot. What are the differences between some of these scenarios? So if we take a look at this slide, Azure SQL is a way that I describe it. Azure SQL is quick and easy. This doesn't mean it's not powerful. Azure SQL is super powerful. Okay, Azure SQL is great for just getting something spun up. You don't have to have as much permission from your infrastructure. You could set an Azure SQL instance up on your own. You can use it for prototypes, development, testing, or full-scale production implementations. Okay, SQL Server 2016 is full-featured. Every single feature possible will always be in SQL Server 2016 first. What I've noticed that Microsoft is doing is they're putting it in SQL Server 2016 first. If people love it and it's working great, then they stick it in Azure SQL. So what you'll see is just this slight delay in time before features are available, like in-memory online transaction processing, you know, always encrypted, you know, stuff like that. So especially if you're on-premises, we have a lot of people that say, I'm on-prem, I want my database right here internally. That's going to be SQL Server 2016, or if they want to spin it up on a VM in Azure and throw it out there. So that's the big difference. When it comes to feature sets, my opinion is for what's being used, most of the things that are actually being used in production for large-scale deployments, there's not a lot of a difference between the features. So let's talk about Azure Object Storage. Now, some of you may be saying, what in the heck is Azure Object Storage? This is what was formerly known as Azure Blob Storage. Some of the marketing data or the slides and documentation up on Azure has not been updated, but in general, the concept of Azure, or the wording Azure Blob Storage seems to be going away, and we've got Azure Object Storage instead. But just pretend that's Blob Storage, because on the back end, all we care about is the code. On the back end, it's Blob Storage. Talking about blob storage. And the main thing about blob storage or object storage is that it's content agnostic. I just used air quotes. I don't know how much I'm going to do that. But it's content agnostic. That's my term. And here's what I mean by content agnostic. You can put any kind of content out there. There's not really this idea of columns or fields or scheme or anything else. You put any kind of content out there. It can be a text file. It could be a document. It could be a Word document, PDF document, whatever. It could be an image. It can be a video. It can be all kinds of stuff. It could just even really be a JSON document. It doesn't matter. Any kind of content goes out there, but you're not going to have any schema or properties necessarily to associate with it. You'll have metadata you can attach to it, but the metadata is really secondary, right? It's very much like you'd have the metadata in your file system. Object storage is very much like what you're having, what you see in your file system on your computer, where you would have a file that exists. It can be any type of file. You right-click over it, you see properties. It's got some metadata. If it's an image, it might have more metadata, keywords, things like that. So object storage is great for everything, and we're going to talk about some other reasons why object storage is great. But object storage has no schema, no columns, no anything like that. If you need to do things like that, like you might be used to in a relational database, this is not the place for it. Azure Document DB is what I call schema agnostic. And I'm going to take this opportunity to just give a quick overview of DocumentDB, because I have developers or even decision makers, stakeholders at organizations all the time that read about DocumentDB, and they think that this is a storage for documents like Word documents or Excel. They think that this is like SharePoint sort of document storage or something like that. And so they think of it that way. But DocumentDB is this concept that what gets stored in it becomes a document. And I'm going to tell you right now, that document is always JSON data. This is a JSON document. Air quotes again. I got to stop doing that. It's a JSON document that's out there that will describe everything that needs to be described. Or you can imagine if it was a customer, it would be a JSON document that would have a customer name and address, and it might have a JSON object below that that might be some details about products. It could be anything in there, but it's schema agnostic, but it's always a JSON document. That's what I want to make clear right off the bat, is DocumentDB stores JSON documents. It can store binaries. You can add attachments. 0 to N attachments can be attached to a document, but it's JSON data. But the thing that's super cool about DocumentDB is that since it's schema agnostic, I don't have to worry about the description of what's going to happen when the description of my data changes. So here's a perfect example. So if I had a customer and I had a customer name and an address and a phone number, if all of a sudden I want to add a salesman reference number or salesman information or product information or an email address field to that, in a relational database scenario, I'd have to go out and I'd have to add a new column. And then I'd have to worry about versioning all of that and what's going to happen with my queries when if some record has it, it doesn't have it, what I'm going to do, how am I going to manage that. DocumentDB doesn't care. You just throw that out. The next time if new fields are added, new properties are added, the document now includes those. And if you were to go to query for it or do anything else against it, then if it doesn't have that value, if you say, show me everything where the email address is this, if the document doesn't contain an email address, it just doesn't care. Any kind of data out there.
Reminds me a little bit of Azure Table Storage, Scott, where you can define attributes in the tables, and each row or record in that table doesn't have to have all of those attributes. Let me just point out one thing really quickly that's really cool about Azure SQL, by the way. Like you said, it is quick and easy to get something up and running, but when I think about Azure SQL, I think about scalability, massive scalability. You know, running SQL Server on the back end, if I've got a single database server, it might suffice if I'm a small company or something, but you know, what if I'm an Amazon.com or I'm Microsoft and I'm running the Microsoft Store? You probably don't want to have to set up clusters of database servers and think about replication and all of that. That's the kind of scenario that Azure SQL makes really, really easy. You can scale up, you can scale out, you can get automatic geo-replication of the data to make sure that even if, you know, an earthquake were to swallow up one data center, that data is still going to be there. So quick and easy, absolutely, but also massive scalability.
Yeah, and I think that this is actually an important point, because if the dynamics of your solution are not known, for example, if I know I've got 1,000 people, it's only these 1,000 people that are ever going to be hitting it. that doesn't matter. But if they're unknown, if you don't know, right? So we're coming up to Black Friday coming up here soon. Mm-hmm. This is the perfect Azure SQL scenario, Black Friday, where you've got, you know, low traffic or medium traffic, then all of a sudden for some very short period of time, you have, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of hits. And if you're using Azure SQL, it's very easy just to not do anything with it. You can set it up so that it says, if all of a sudden I get a million concurrent users, just do this. Just scale up, scale out, whatever you want to do. So great point.
Yeah, and I mean, isn't that what we think of when we think about the cloud also? We think about scalability in so many places in Azure. You can manually scale. You can configure something to auto-scale. You know, every time I read in the news or see something online about some company was mentioned somewhere and their website crashed because all of a sudden they had that huge spike in traffic, I think they weren't using Azure because Azure would have handled that so easily.
Yeah. In fact, I think those stories are going to pretty soon go away. People are going to look back and laugh. Oh, you remember when we couldn't easily scale based on traffic, when we couldn't do things like that?
Yep.
Yeah. So we're talking about all this storage, but let's talk about why I think this is, I mean, I guess it's an opinion, but why I think SQL Server data tools in Visual Studio 2015 and now the improvements in 17 are so cool. Because here's some of the challenges that people run into that we talked a little bit about. We've got schema changes that come in all the time, right? We're adding or removing fields or, you know, things are just changing. We have version differences, so we're going to roll out a new version of the database that's supposed to match a new version of, you know, whatever, our middle tiers, our business logic, our front end, all kinds of version differences. We worry about having reproducible deployments, and here's what I mean by that. This, again, and I'm going to get back to this all the time, it's this always, it works on my machine thing, or it works in development machine, or it works in development, and then we realize that our staging or production environment looks different, and a lot of times that comes back to one, not just one field somewhere, but what the data type of one field. Like, I've had scenarios where for some reason I had a varchar 50 in development and a varchar 20 in staging and production. Things like that are very common. And we have these diverse environments. So we could have Azure SQL, we could have SQL Server 2017. SQL Server 2016. Don't everybody freak out that there's a SQL Server 2017 out there. SQL Server 2016. And now we've got this crazy thing being added into it, SQL Server for Linux. So we have all these diverse environments and what we used to do, which a lot of times I still am worried that I'm going to start doing if I don't pay attention, is I would go out to SQL Server Management Studio and just, you know, run SQL scripts out there. The problem with that is not only is it not integrated with my environment, but everything's loosey-goosey. I can take all those scripts, I can take those SQL scripts, I can do all of those things, and I can put them into TFS. I mean, I can do it the hard way and kind of meet the needs. But this ability to just very quickly go look at schemas across things or things that exist or don't exist across environments, look at the data, compare the data across environments, and then make decisions easily from a UI and from the tooling hasn't really existed. So there are third parties that have tried to do this, and it hasn't been really that successful. So these are the challenges. So with SQL Server data tools, the Visual Studio integration, and again, if you were on Visual Studio 2015 Update 3, this was usually a separate install. But this is now, if you do the data tools, there's data and data science tools that you can select in Visual Studio 2017. This is going to be installed for you. So with the tools, we've got this full schema and entity creation. And here's what I mean by that. Is that you can just create everything that you want to create from tools if you want to. So if you love using scripts, it's not any problem if you love using scripts, but you have these tools to do that, and there's also graphical designers that, you know, we're referring to nowadays as tooling, where I can actually just select a template or a type of thing just like I would for a class file or a view or a controller or a new project template. I can just go out and say, create new asymmetric key, or what we're going to show in our example, create new temporal table, right? So it's, even if you're really good at this and you know how to do all of this, this is just easier. You may just want to do it the old school way, but if you're like me, I'm a software developer. I do tons of database stuff, but I'm not a DB guy. And when I get on projects, there's some really good DBA or some really good DB guy there. I want to be able to do some of this stuff on my own, especially in development and staging. I can do that through these tools. The other thing that I love is this: these two concepts of managed publishing and source code integration. Because we have the ability now to create database projects right from Visual Studio, this is just a project. This is just a project that comes in, just like any other project that I can connect to TFS or Git or whatever I want to do, and that can all be integrated just like anything else. So, here's what I want to walk through, Jeff, if you're okay with that. I want to just go through and pull up SQL Server Data Tools in Visual Studio. I want to take a look at some of the templates there, and I want to create a temporal table. Okay? And if you're not familiar with what temporal tables are, it's this great idea. The way that I think about it is in the SharePoint world, because I do a lot of SharePoint development. In the SharePoint world, we always had this great ability to do versioning against things. So if you can imagine versioning against your tables, this is basically what temporal tables are. So at any given time, you could go back historically, run queries, or see historically what your data looked like. This includes inserts, updates, deletes at a given point in time based on a system time. So I could say, show me what all the data looked like, you know, 5 minutes ago or 3 minutes ago or 10 days ago, almost like a little snapshot that gets saved in history. And then what we're going to do is we're going to compare the data out there with what we have in SQL Server 2016. So right now this solution's going against Azure SQL. We'll move all of that over to SQL Server 2016 on Windows, and then we'll actually publish the schema out there through Visual Studio. What do you think about that?
I think it sounds good. Let's do it.
Let's get in there. All right, so I'm back over here in Visual Studio 2017, and there's a number of different ways we can pull up and access database projects, and we can access the SQL Server data tools. One of the most common ways that I like is just in the SQL Server Object Explorer. Let's let that expand there. Okay, we'll refresh. Remember, we're on RC, folks. Oh, let me make a change here on that. We'll disconnect that. Let's add it again, and I'm going to connect to, we'll select, there we go. Expand that there. Okay, so we've got that instance of that server reference in SQL Server Explorer, but one cool thing that we can do here is we can just right-click over our database and we can say schema compare. We could also say create new project. For this example, we're going to walk through a few of them, but for this example, I'm going to say create new project. And so I'm going to say start. And here's what's going to happen there. This is a place where Visual Studio sometimes will crash. We'll see if it does or not. How are we looking out there on Tagger? Is everything going great out there? Is people getting good?
Yeah, I think so. I was actually just uploaded a couple of images myself. It seems to be handling the load very well. Not surprising, since it's sitting out there as an Azure web app.
Great.
With some scaling parameters configured.
Great.
So far, so good, Scott, and I'm keeping an eye on it.
Great. So what we ended up having to do, because Mr. Guthrie wanted us to do it, is in a matter of about 3 seconds, we had to go out and sort of do a scale up, scale out on that in Azure. So here's what happened. I right-clicked over Tagger that was right from the SQL Server Object Explorer, and I said create project. And notice that it went out and it looked at that Azure SQL instance, and it just went through and it gathered information on everything. Notice how this isn't just tables and stored procedures. In fact, I'm going to tell you, this is even like encryption-based stuff that's out there. Column encryption keys and things like that. And here's where it'll sometimes crash. We'll hope it doesn't. I'll say finish to continue. And what's happening is it went out and it's going to create class files for us for any of the entities that are out there that we care about. So we'll see that this database one gets added right here. If I expand that, it sees that I have stored procedures and tables. I've got this tags table, tags history, and uploads table right here. We'll expand that there. And of course, if I open this, we'll open that SQL. This should look familiar to those of you that have been using this on 2015 Update 3. So it's not behind the scenes, this is actually SQL query, but we're seeing this nice graphical designer here. But so what if I don't have some of this that exists in 2016? Here's how I would, SQL Server 2016, how I'd normally do it is I'd go out and look manually. And again, there's tools, but this is how I would do it. I would go out and look manually, see that something doesn't exist, kind of expand some of the nodes and just make a best guess. And then I would go to SQL Server Management Studio and say new query, and I'd run a script and cross my fingers. I can't be the only person in the world that has done that, and it was a horrible mistake I could never recover from. So I've done it. Oh, and I've been developing software for almost 30 years now, and I have to admit that I probably have done that 15 times. So it's a super common thing to do. This, in SQL Server Data Tools, is going to give us a way to make to prevent that from happening. So if I right-click over that and I say Schema Compare, it says that I've got, this is my source. This tagger.database.windows.net is an Azure SQL instance that's out there. I'm going to select a target here, and I'm just going to select a connection. We'll say this one is the Windows database version of that. I'm going to show the connection properties to make sure my password is I love tacos. In case you want to hack that, it's I love tacos _123 which of course is a lie. So if I say connect there, wait, let's see, maybe I don't even know the password. Ah, there we go. So maybe it wasn't I love tacos _ what, I don't even know what I even said.
Or maybe it was.
Or maybe it was. You'll never know. Guess my password, win a million ruka. Okay, so I've got my source and destination now. Remember that the source for this is Azure SQL. This is running in Azure SQL. It's an Azure SQL instance. The destination of this, or what I'm going to compare it against, this is a SQL Server 2016 instance that's actually spun up on a VM, also in Azure, but this could be any VM anywhere. As long as you can access it from your environment, it can do this. And then I'm going to say compare. There's going to be a little bit of time here while now it's going across the wire. It's actually doing around 5,000 or 6,000 different things probably here. And it's going to take a look at what the schema that exists out in Windows on 2016 and what exists in Azure SQL, and it's going to give us some options here. So let's take a second and wait. Or I could sing. This could be an opportunity for me to sing here. Okay, so here's what it's saying. It says everything looks the same out there, except you don't have this tags history. Remember, we talked about this temporal table. So we have this tag history that's out there. So what I could do is I could write the script and I could do it in SQL Server Management Studio, but instead, we can just add them here. And so I can look at this view in a couple different ways. This is by the action, like add, delete, update, or whatever. We can look at it by the schema. We just expand that. And if this was super complicated, this would make a big difference. We could say, okay, show me just all the tables or the types. But I'll just say by action, we have that here. So now we know that it's different. And all we have to do now at this point is just say update. So are you sure you want to update the target? It's saying, you sure you want to do this? Yep. By the way, I could have saved these scripts and reviewed them. In fact, I probably should have done that before. But one thing that would happen when I reviewed this, if I were to review the scripts, oh, so it actually said that it failed. So I haven't seen that. We'll see the error list there. I've actually never seen that happen. So let's just see if we can do something else here. We'll say compare. If it doesn't like what we're doing here, I've got... They're so powerful that I can do it 5 or 6 different ways. In fact, you know what would be fun? Let's close this. Let's just do it this way. I'm going to say table, add, new item. You know what? I'm actually going to take a look at that. So we can just create it that way. I'm going to say table, add, new item. And this is cool, just using the tooling, I'll just go down and say temporal table. And I'll call this table. Okay, actually I'm going to do it even better way. You guys are going to think that this is extra cool here. So actually what I'm going to do now is I'm going to add a server, and I'm going to connect directly to that one. There we go. Let that load up there. And I'm going to say new project right from here. If it lets me load it.
Don't you love working with RC products?
Yes. We'll figure it out one way or another. Okay, so we'll try it another way. We'll just do this here again. We'll say, we'll close that there, refresh.
You know, if all else fails, it might be worth just trying it again, or even restarting VS just to see if that might have an effect.
Yeah, we could
obviously, you know, RC things won't be
we could
won't be an issue with the RTM.
We could definitely do that as well. So yep. I'm just going to real
you
quick.
You never know, right?
We never, ever know. So just for fun, we'll just do this and say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and we can just get there. Let's try it that way.
You know what I like about this, Scott?
Yes.
It shows me you're human just like the rest of us.
Yeah, so I try and avoid the appearance of being human, but I'm extremely flawed. So we pulled it in again, and now we've got the database here, and I'm going to do this way. I'm going to say create new project. It's going to want to be database 2 there. And so here's what we're going to do this way. Since the tooling was acting a little goofy, I'm just going to create that temporal table right directly in that SQL Server 2016. And here's where I'll show you the script, too, because this is where people start to get scared when they say, you know, update this. They're like, well, what in the heck is going on? I want to see what's going on. Good developers don't pay attention to the details. We just say, oh, it'll be handled. But some people really care about the details. So I'll say finish there, and we'll notice that we've got these tables now. We've only got tags and uploads. So in the source, we had tags, uploads, and tags history. I want to create this tags history that looked like this. And here's the concept with tags history. Is I thought, wouldn't it be cool if we could see the images that are getting uploaded and they're getting tagged, if we can look historically how those tags fall out, right? We can look to see if there's trends. This is something that we could eventually bring into our services, you know, take a look at the trends that are happening over time with these tags. This is very similar to a search engine. Sometimes, you know, you can look at Bing history or Google history over the course of time in search history and tell what's going on, what people care about, right? So we're going to right-click over tables, and we'll say add new table, and we'll say temporal table, and I'm going to call this tags history. So it matches. And see, you see how it set up all this system versioning for me here with the temporal table? Here's what's going to happen behind the scenes. Some people don't know that this is what's happening. It's actually setting up a secret table called underscore. So it'll be called tags history underscore history that's referenced here. It's setting up kind of a secondary table to manage these. But in the UI, most of the time, it'll show linked. It'll show as linked. And I'm just going to copy and paste that. Here's all that I did, though, really, is I just changed the ID to a unique identifier. I don't like ints as unique as primary keys anymore. It seems very 1992. And then I added this label. The label is going to be the tag there. And so we've got this here. We've got this script here. But if you're used to the older style, you would normally have an update or publish here. But that doesn't exist when we create it this way. Instead, what we do is we say this, publish. Now, this is very strange for people to actually publish your database items over. But so I'm going to make sure that my target database is that one. Hopefully I don't have to update too much information in there. But before I publish, I'm going to say generate script, because I want everybody to see what's going to happen in this script. Because some people might be thinking, oh, it's going to wipe out tags and uploads. Those already exist out there. It's going to wipe those out. Let's look at what it's actually going to do. Notice that it was smart. SQL Server Data Tools was smart enough to see that the only thing that doesn't actually exist out there was tags history. See, so there's nothing in, there's no drop scripts or alter schemas. There's nothing that's in here except for just tags history. It was smart enough to know that. And here's just the truth. If I did this and something was different in the schema, it would do a drop or alter to just that piece. It would update what it needs to update. So now that we know that it's happy there, we'll say publish. And just as a note, in 2017 RC, some of these database selections in the tooling, they don't always hold. Password holds now, but some of these selections don't hold. So I'm just going to select that again. This will not be true in the final release, I'm sure. But so now that I know that it's safe, and once you build up some level of confidence with this, that'll happen. Now that I know it's safe, I'm just going to say publish. What we don't want to see is this little red X. I don't like the little red X there. I want to see a green circle with a checkbox in it. So it said it did all of that, did all of that. And we're done. So that's great. So now if I expand these tables, I ought to see a tags history table that shows up there. I'll wait for that to refresh there for a second. And there we go. So we've got this tags history. It lets us know, real cool through the UI, that this is system versioned. And if we can see it, it's a little small here, but if we can see it, it's got this little clock on there to show that it's a history. That's a temporal table. We'll have actually a different icon there. So that exists out there now. But what we want to do is, let me just put that forward there. What we want to do is update our app now. Remember, because this whole thing is all about this cool app that we've got going on. So let me just close those. In fact, so we don't get it messy, we want people to be able to pay attention to everything. Let me just remove those database projects from there. And let's take a look at how we would point it over there. So this isn't gonna be rocket science, this is just gonna be a connection string. Here's the technique that I'm using here for those of you that are following along though. So remember I have this app JSON, I've got this sort of this array of connection strings here. One of them is Azure SQL. The next one is going to be Windows SQL. It's just going to be pointed to this windowsdb.tagger.it that I have. And then in my code, I've been forcing it to go to Azure, but I have this little platform helper that I wrote. I've been forcing it to go to Azure, but now I'm going to say if you're running on a Windows server, go to SQL Server. So basically what this says down here, if you're running on Windows, go to Windows. And what's gonna happen in my startup, it's gonna pull that app.json information, and then right here, it's gonna use SQL Server based on that platform helper and get us a different direction. Okay, so let's do that. Let's run that. This is a good opportunity to see how this is performing too. Because so on the back end, so my front end right now is localhost, but my back end is all that stuff that's out there in Azure. We'll just see how this is working now. We'll upload a photo here. I think I set this up to accept about 5 at a time. You could drag and drop up to 5 at a time here. Let's take we'll just take that red panda. See how that works there. So now what ought to happen here is it should upload it, and it did. So now instead of uploading to Azure SQL, it's going to upload it to a SQL Server 2016, and now it's going to look for that on that SQL Server there as well, and we'll see that it tagged it as a close-up of a panda bear, which that is, that's a red panda, and we've got all the tags. So great, so just to walk through what we've done there, we've taken that SQL Server Azure SQL information, we compared it to 16, we pushed over everything new that we want to have in there, and now the app is officially in my environment going against that. So this we haven't talked at all though about blob storage, so why don't we flip back over to the slide deck and talk about blob storage, unless you have anything to add on this. This is a big topic here.
No, that's cool, and the new data tools, it's funny you said I've probably done this manually 15 times in the last few years. I did something very, very similar recently, and I also did it manually. It was quite painful to do it. But you know, with regard to object storage and blob storage, which we're about to talk about, if there's one thing that's true when we build these applications, there are a lot of different ways to store the data. And one of the things I love about blob storage, because I do use it quite a lot, is that it's very, very fast. So if I don't have a need to store relational data, I want to store images and things like that, and I want to make it just as fast as it can possibly be, I usually think about blob storage.
Yeah, and these are the exact reasons that the primary reasons that I love it. Not only can it be any kind of data, but it is ultra-fast performance. I mean, if you write a solution based on object storage, all of your concepts almost about how to make a high-performing app go out the window, because that whole layer, that whole data access, or that whole data layer just changes so much, and your performance is really just based off the scale of your service out there. It's just going to be immediate. And the primary reason for that is there's just not overhead, right? Because this is content agnostic. Put any content out there. But a couple of things, if we look at this slide, a couple of things that folks don't know when they're using this is that, number one, this can be indexed. And when I say indexed, this can be indexed for full text search index if we want it. Not just index that we're going to show a little bit later, like for Azure Search. But for example, if I wanted to throw a bunch of Word documents or PDFs out in object storage, I can use an iFilter and have it be full text index. This is just a sneaky thing to do. If you're out there and you want to have PDFs, put a bunch of PDFs out in a way that will be full text searchable, and you don't want to write all the code to do that or worry about any of those scenarios, throw it out into object storage somewhere, and you can actually do search against those. The other thing is this concept of object mutability, and what that really means is I can change them in place and it's not going to mess stuff up. But the last one that I love the best is that object storage is so easily integrated into workflows. And by workflows, I'm talking right now about really three, maybe four things. I'm talking about workflows in Azure Functions. The example that we're going to show, for example, is in a workflow where it will say, just listen to see if one of these images gets uploaded to object storage, if it does kick off a workflow. Well, the workflow we're going to show is a workflow that's going to do some analysis against the image, eventually do a bunch of cool things to it. But this can be integrated with a Logic app, right? Or, you know, the Microsoft Flow kind of concepts. This can even be integrated, if we need to, in workflows in SharePoint. I mean, there's a whole bunch of places there, and it's just such a great scenario to use to integrate with a workflow, because we're able to easily say, don't do anything unless something gets added to this storage, like we sort of used to do with triggers in SQL Server database with triggers, but way more powerful. So there's a couple different ways to manage object storage. Up until just maybe 2 days ago, there was basically no tools. There were basically no tools in the Azure portal to manage object storage. Today, you have the ability at least to do a little bit. You can upload content and you can find a little bit of content through the Azure portal, which is great. It might serve your need, but at least up to this morning, you couldn't, for example, look at any metadata. And our process writes metadata out to it. So our cool process, when it tags an image, it'll write certain things to the metadata of an object. So one of the tools that we use, this is actually a Microsoft tool called the it's called Azure Storage Explorer still, but it's going to be changed, I'm guessing, to Azure Object Storage. And this is a tool that we can use. It's been written by Microsoft to do this. This is probably a good spot to say there's another Storage Explorer that's out there that's not the same one. I don't know what folks wrote that.
It was written here at Microsoft. It's okay. Called the Azure Storage Explorer also. It's been around for a few years, but it's a Windows-only tool. So like you said, the new cross-platform Azure Storage Explorer has been available for a few months now. They're constantly updating it, adding cool new features to it. It's actually written in Node, by the way, with Electron for the UI layer.
Okay, so hold on just a second. So yeah. Those of you that are watching this, just in case you were making a sandwich or, you know, on YouTube or whatever, not paying attention to this, I would like you to say that again, Jeff.
The cross-platform Azure Storage Explorer is written with Node.js and Electron.
Okay.
In fact, it's one of the best examples I've seen out there in the wild of an application written that way, which just to show that you can build very, very functional and very rich cross-platform applications. Most people, certainly most users, would have no idea how this thing was written because it looks like just about every other app that you've looked at. So it's a great little tool. And by the way, it doesn't just deal with blob or object storage. It can show you Azure tables, mm-hmm. Azure queues, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. For a lot of us who are dealing with Azure storage every day, it's become our go-to tool. Now, I still use Cloud Explorer a lot, mm-hmm. In Visual Studio. I love that, but I also love this tool right here. And by the way, there's a lot you can do in the portal. For a long time in the Azure portal, you've been able to create a storage account, create containers, download blobs and stuff. But as you pointed out, it was only within recent days that we gained the ability in the Azure portal to upload a blob. In case you don't know that's there, go check it out. But this lets us go a level deeper, examining blob metadata and things like that. So all hail Azure Storage Explorer. It's a great tool.
Yep. And so we're actually going to show that a little bit because this is one of my favorite ways to manage these things. So here's what we're going to do in this demo. I'm going to point out the objects and the containers that we're going to use that are going to kind of replace this concept that we have currently, which is we're sending, remember this old school method of sending all this binary data out to Azure SQL or SQL Server. This is great, it works, it's old school, but it's not the fastest way to do it. So I'm going to point out these two containers that we have that are going to replace that process. And honestly, I'm only creating two containers because it's more fun, because we're going to hook this up to some other things. And then we're going to change the logic. This is going to prepare us to change the logic so that we can call that storage, those storage containers, instead of SQL Server 2016. So let's just look at Storage Explorer, and I'm going to point out a couple of things real quick. Just load that up. And Microsoft Azure Storage Explorer. And why that's loading, Jeff, you mentioned Cloud Explorer in Microsoft Visual Studio 2016. This might be a good spot to let viewers know that if they are using Cloud Explorer right now, there's a known bug where your resources may not show up in Cloud Explorer. They might show in Server Explorer, some other areas, but they won't show in Cloud Explorer. One technique that I have used successfully is if you change it from looking at resource types to resource groups, they will magically show up. This is a known issue. It's been logged. They're working on this. But right now, if you're using the RC right now and nothing, you'll see your subscriptions in Cloud Explorer, but you won't see the resources. That's a way that you can see the resources usually. So here I am, Storage Explorer. If we expand to the blob containers, I've got these two containers now. I've got app uploads and app downloads, and I'm able to see all of the content here. So for example, if I were to look at this app uploads and I go to properties, I've got no metadata on it. This is what we're going to target as the upload. We're going to try and change this process so that people can upload to this location instead of the SQL Server. The final result of the process, though, we'll send the information to this app downloads. And if I were to look at the app downloads, you'll see, let me find a different one there. Properties. So you'll see now if you look down, I've got where it's available, I've got metadata that gets written. So this tells us whether it's adult content, racy content, what the percentage is, a caption. So apparently somebody uploaded a cat sitting on top of a skateboard. Thumbs up for that one. That's probably great. And all the tags with other information, I've written that to the metadata so that we have that attached and associated with that. So those are good. We're not going to do much more with that now. We're going to wait till the next session to do that with it. But the concept here is that right now, ask yourself, am I using Azure SQL? Am I using SQL Server 2016? Do I need to be using that, or am I doing using that because that's what I know about? It doesn't mean you should transition off. These are great technologies, great solutions. But are there scenarios where all you're doing is just storing something that doesn't need all of that scheme associated with it? And could I reasonably move that over to object storage? Well, we think in this scenario that we could probably do that. That's what we're thinking. There's a couple of other changes that we can make to this. The ultimate goal, though, will be for us to be able to change that in our own environment and not have any problems with that. So let's see what else we got here. Here's just a couple of tips and tricks before we move out of this session. Oh, crap. Okay, so now apparently Ninja Cat is calling me. Hold on, folks. I apologize for this. Yes. Some meowing, fire breathing. Hold on. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Oh, crud. Okay, so Ninja Cat Call said this is really cool, but he thinks it would be way cooler if we could just right now, not wait till a later session, if in the next session we could just move this, all of this out to an Azure function and object storage now. What he's asked, he's kind of hard to hear because I think that he's in Antarctica with his fire-breathing Tyrannosaurus, but what he wants us to do instead of waiting and doing this piece by piece is he'd like us in the next session to move all of this out to an Azure function and to object storage, not transition it. We were going to do this slowly, as you know, so what do you think? Do you think that we're up to that?
I think we are, because you know what? I think for folks that haven't seen Azure Functions, I think they will absolutely love it. Because right now our code is pretty linear, right? Mm-hmm, you know, you've got that method, I think it's called upload file async, where you write it into SQL or you write it into blob storage and you call out to cognitive services and stuff. You know, we talk a lot about microservices, nanoservices these days. Let's shoot for something more like that. By the way, do you think it was Ninja Cat that uploaded the cat picture you saw?
So that I was actually thinking that at this time. I was thinking, how is it that all of a sudden we get up to this point, right? We've been working on the solution. There were almost zero cat images, but I noticed on the side you were searching through what people are uploading. There's about 14% of the images now that have been uploaded have a cat in them. So I think you might be onto something there.
Okay, tell what I'm going to do. I'm not a cat person. I do have a parrot who's almost 30 years old. Okay. Sits on my shoulder at home. I'm going to upload some parrot pictures. I mean, we need some equity here, right?
Yep, I agree. So here's what we're going to do, folks. We're going to take about a 10-minute break. I'm going to get stuff set up for the next session because, honestly, we've got to step it up a little bit here now because now we're going to have to do some stuff that we hadn't planned on because nobody wants to disappoint Ninja Cat. And then we'll see you guys back here in about 10 minutes.